welcome to Frame Society. This is our first episode. This is a show where we talk about movies and social issues that are depicted within them. I'm Shanna.
Should I say merch or my real name?
I think you can go by merch.
Okay, then merch it is. I'm merch.
Well, and I'm sausage, I guess. I don't know how to say it better than that.
Okay, for our very first episode, we decided we were gonna talk about The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Themes we wanted to talk about in this movie is obviously prejudice and oppression, but also the humanity and the villain of the film, Frollo. He's a really well-constructed character in that sense, yes. And we wanted to explore that a lot. I think we can actually start with Frollo, so we can move to the rest. I don't know which all.
Yeah, I think we should just give a little introduction of the movie.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Where who the directors are and why it's such an important movie for the Disney Renaissance era. So this movie is from 1996. It's supposedly adapted from the novel Notre Dame de Paris by Victor Hugo. The directors are Gary Trousdale and Kirk Weiss, who also directed Beauty and the Beast, and that was amazing. So you can really perceive and understand the dark theme adaptation and that are both in common. They're in common in both movies. Oh my god. And how that makes this movie so important and mature for the Disney content. The Renaissance era is an era that...
I think it was basically like in the 90s when they won their Academy Awards with Beauty and the Beast, and they started getting like... They obviously had revenue before, but it got like a way bigger scale, and they got a lot of awards during that time. And their whole approach to movies kind of changed a lot too.
Yeah.
The archetypes of characters even.
Renaissance literally means rebirth. So
yeah. So it was.
It is as simple as that.
I mean, most of us have lived through that, right? Like. We grew up with it
with the movies from that era. Because we definitely come after that.
Like 2000 kids, like
that started with A Little Mermaid in 1989, then Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Hercules is also from that era, and Hunchback of the Notre Dame.
Yeah,
I forgot the name. Oh my god!
It happens to the best of us. So, you know, for those who haven't seen the movie, which I think is like a small percentage of people.
No, I actually think it's bigger because it's one of the less seen. Yeah, Disney movie.
Yeah,
I have that feeling. I guess.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I didn't watch it. When I was really, really young, I watched it for the first time when I was like probably 11 or 12. So it's not like really a movie that I carry through my existence, I guess.
Oh, that's real funny.
I don't know.
I mean, I had the idea that most people have watched it because growing up, all of the people around me were really into that movie and other movies, you know, Disney.
The odd one out, I guess.
I mean,
that's okay.
Anyway, for those that haven't seen the movie, be them as many or as little as they actually are, the movie talks about
themes.
I would argue that the story really starts and ends with Frollo, actually. The story starts with him being a minister of justice, being really connected to his religion and his supposedly virtue that he thinks he has. and he's prosecuting these people. He's Gypsy, chasing
yeah.
this couple of gypsies, and they are protecting something. And you know, spoiler alert, he kills the woman, and he finds out that those goods are a deformed child. And
Quasimodo,
and he tries to drown him, but a priest appears. The priest of, like, I think he's a bishop, actually.
Yes.
Notre Dame. And he judges Frollo, and he says that the eyes of the church of the building are upon him, and so the eyes of God have seen his bad actions, and Frollo feels obligated to take care of Quasimodo, and so he walks.
Care?
So he take care is a
like very just let him leave.
Yeah. So he locks him up in the towers of the church and makes him the bell ringer for the church, and he hides them there. And the story starts from there.
Right.
And that's basically the introduction.
The intro. How the movie introduces the main characters, I think, because afterwards Esmeralda appears and Phoebus, but
Phoebus is not a main character. I mean,
he's not a main character. No, he's just there. Yeah, he's just there.
He's such a good old pal. Just let him be there.
He is the hero.
Yeah,
like cliche. Yeah, the hero. But I mean, he's a nice guy.
The funniest parts of the movie is when he starts getting into fights with Quasimodo, because Quasimodo is actually real strong, and once he starts to realize that he's not a monster and that he is a person with any rights as any other person has, he starts feeling very not possessive but like defensive of himself and of like Esmeralda, because Phoebus is really going for it, and Quasimodo
Quasimodo hasn't really been in touch with society, and Esmeralda is his first door into that, and then comes Phoebus, major flirt, and he's just like, whoa, we don't do that to friends, okay? Chill the F out, okay, dude? Quasimodo is like trying to process his feelings. It might not always be in the best way, but it's a great evolution we see. And I think Quasimodo is a great character in that sense. He grows a lot throughout the film, and it doesn't feel forced to me. It's like, you know, he makes a mistake here, and sure, the next time he doesn't make it, but it doesn't feel like all of a sudden he understands everything, you know? It's a really good build-up of his new experiences, I think.
Yeah, the character development in this movie of Quasimodo is amazing. And actually, we always, when we talk about this movie, it always comes to discussion, that last scene where Phoebus and Esmeralda stay together, and Quasimodo is there left alone, joining their hands. And
yeah, it's just like, okay, friend zone forever, I guess.
But it's actually a great ending, because I think that if he would have been with Esmeralda,
it wouldn't have the same message to it. I think so too.
Because the purpose of his character development is not to find someone to love, but
to love himself.
To discover himself and to understand.
Nice. Accept his own existence.
Because he's always, throughout his life, Frollo was always saying that he was a fool, nobody would like him. So he started to. Quasimodo had the choice to get out and live life.
But he never did.
Yeah, because he was scared. It wasn't mainly because of Frollo's orders.
Frollo made me thought, like, when I, you know, rewatched the movie, It made me thought a lot of the mother of Rapunzel.
Yes! Oh my god! The same archetype.
The same arc. Yeah.
Exactly. I was writing that yesterday. I was like, oh my god, Rapunzel and Quasimodo could have been cousins
Something. Like, it's super fun. Like, you know, like somebody write this. Like, make Frollo saying "Mother knows best." It would be like it would fit in so well.
Yeah, it would actually.
I mean, Mother knows best and Hellfire, a mashup of that. It would just beautiful. Yeah. I think those are some of my favorite villain songs
yeah.
because they are so. They show so well how human the villains are, you know, the villains.
There
are villains that aren't villains for being villains just because it's fun. Like, you know, Mother Gothel. She's greedy and she wants to live forever and she wants.
But she has
she
beliefs.
Wants youth.
And she does everything she do for
her. It's her belief.
Yeah.
It's her self preservation. Is it right? I mean,
no.
But she's doing the best.
Yeah, she's not evil for the sake of being evil.
Yeah, she has a goal.
Yeah.
And it's the same with Frollo. And I think we can jump into the whole dynamic of Frollo throughout the film. Because Frollo is such a righteous man. He thinks he has such a high moral and standard.
Yeah, yeah.
He thinks he's above the other people. He can see sin and he can punish sin. But he thinks he is above sin. And
then he sinned, actually.
And then he actually
sinned.
And then, and through that, because he thinks he's above that, you know, he kills, he oppresses other people, he is blatantly racist against a whole group of people, and he commits genocide amongst other flaws, and he doesn't, at first it's almost like he doesn't see it because it's justifiable. He's doing it for his cause.
And
then with Hellfire, and with his, we get to see that it's not all that. He's struggling with it. He finds. I don't think it's love. I think it's lust.
It is.
He's lusting after Esmeralda because she's provocative. She doesn't follow rules, and
she's pretty beautiful.
She's amazingly beautiful. And in that moment, I think it's when we see.
The villain is like he evolves a lot in the movie too. It started off by being just blind with all the power he has. He doesn't even know that what he's doing is actually wrong.
Yeah.
But with the Hellfire song, and you can clearly see that from then, he understands that what he's doing is not right, and it will lead him to his doom, undeniably. So it just like accepts it because of Esmeralda.
Yeah, he
in that song, there's this really amazing part where he's saying something along the lines of "It's not my fault. I'm not to blame." And in the background,
mea culpa.
It's beautiful.
That's
and then he
amazing.
Says. And when the music starts to fade in the end, there's that Kyrie eleison thing and the whole like religious thing of repent.
Yeah,
that's going in the song and him still not being able to say, he's like, I'm doing wrong things, but I am not wrong. He doesn't repent when his subconscious
it's just
is saying,
like,
it's your fault.
God
are doing
have mercy on Esmeralda.
Yeah.
God have mercy on us.
Yeah.
So it's not like me and Esmeralda. They're just like both sinners in his eyes. And that's funny. Like the Dies Irae, theme of death, appears a lot in his songs, both in the opening song and the Hellfire. But in the Hellfire, he actually sings the notes of the Dies Irae. And so you can clearly understand that he now is absolutely like, he knows that what he's doing is wrong, that death is within him, and that he will die undeniably for what he did.
Isn't that musical theme, isn't that like the Kyrie? Isn't that?
It's like, you know, it appears, I don't remember who actually like composed it, but he appears
Alan Menken
in Sweeney Todd's And to it actually is a leitmotif to Sweeney, yeah, because death is within him. Yeah. And Frollo has actually kind of the same relationship with that leitmotif than Sweeney does. But yeah, I don't really, I'm not a musical kid, but you know.
From what I've read of the Dies Irae, it's obviously a church song. It's about death mass. It's a part of church. And even, for example, in Frozen 1 and 2, the Dies Irae melody is there with the variations. You can't hear the original Dies Irae, but it's there in variations. Because in Frozen, it's not about the character, which is Elsa, that's connected to it. It's not about her dying or her accepting death or inflicting death. It's about her talking with the dead, talking with the past. Yeah. And she goes to the dead, to dead memories, to frozen memories, to construct her own character.
Yeah,
her
to
own,
reconnect with herself.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, this happens too in the end of The Hunchback. You can hear the melody of the Dies Irae, like, a little bit changed. So, like, Frollo is now dead, right? Spoiler alert. And... So he is dead, and it's like a rebirth for all the other characters. So, yeah, I don't know. That's nice. That's really smart, because everybody knows the Dies Irae. Everybody has heard it at least once.
Even in
so we understand it.
Yeah, it repeats itself.
It's
yeah.
that creepy song, that creepy melody that always appears in high tension moments in films. Like Star Wars has it.
Yeah.
It's really popular, and it's the kind of sounds that you unconsciously.
No,
already feel you
yeah,
feel
you
that.
Feel it, because it is so like
it's chilling.
It's so into our pop culture.
Yeah.
Everybody has heard it at least once or twice, and so even if we don't get that it is the Dies Irae and it is the theme of death, and you know it has meaning to it, we understand that it is used in those moments for those purpose. And
yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a smart thing. Like The Hunchback of Notre Dame is one of the best soundtrack.
I loved it. Alan Menken is an amazing man.
Yeah.
He had already made amazing music in this Renaissance era of Disney, and in this is just mind-blowing the way he can connect and intertwine church music with the sound of the bells. They really went to Notre Dame to record the sound of the bells playing so they can have inspiration to create the whole vibe of the movie, because if we see it clearly, the music almost, yeah, and that is the example of what you were talking about, of the how do you say it?
Yes,
the theme of death. It really shows how music has such a big control and on the story and the characters.
It does. It is really, really important, and I mean. It's musical, so of course the music has so much like weight on the narrative. So it's really nice.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Absolutely. Sorry.
No, but like the whole, I don't know, I feel like the whole vibe of the movie, it's really interesting because, you know, the first story about like the book, right, for Victor Hugo's story, it wasn't about the people or the music or humanity. It was actually it had a very like absurdist tone and about fatality and like you know
Hugo.
how
Hugo.
Bad humanity
totally.
Actually is and how it doesn't deserve a lot of it, of things that it gets, a lot of what we experience. And it was much more about architecture and how architecture spoke to the people, and the whole book was actually to save the building.
Yeah.
And so, you know, having gone through a lot of adaptations and having a story of its own almost now, the story, it's really interesting how when the book was written the story spoke and about the architecture, and the architecture was the focal thing about the story and how it developed.
Yeah,
it's really interesting that now, since the story has changed and adapted, and it's more about
the people
and the
prejudice and
the whole scheme of things, you know, in the human story. The building is very present still,
but it's just a building, and basically. It represents still the power of God and this protection.
Yeah,
kind of.
It's still
because
overwhelming.
It's sanctuary.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, it is a house of God.
Yeah, it's still overwhelming for us the building, because we have, because of that vision and that purpose of Victor Hugo's on his piece of literature. We already have grown to see those pieces of architecture as works of art, and that they need to be preserved, and because otherwise, like that video we saw, they would have been completely destroyed and vandalized, because people didn't know how to respect those.
Yeah, they didn't understand the
value,
the importance.
Yeah, and in that sense, the movie now, with all its differences to the original story, it's really interesting how, you know, this contrast where in the beginning the architecture was a really important language element to the story.
Yeah.
Now, with this movie, with the Disney movie, not only the lyrics, but especially the motifs, the melody.
Yeah.
It's such an important part, and there's so much history hidden in the songs, you know, in the melody of it, the composition. It's really interesting. I mean, I'm not a musician, so I can't really talk about it with a lot of depth, but it's really interesting to see people analyze it and decompose it, because there's so much there, you know.
Yeah.
And it's amazing the effort and the work that's embedded in every single note, you know, every thought that's in every variation, in every high note, in every, you know, it's really, I don't know, it's
absolutely
an interesting point to
Disney,
experience.
Disney actually made great musicals over the years, and
they're
really, really good with it. That now you can't just like watch a Disney and say maybe it's not that good. No, it is great, and it works with music so great.
Yeah.
So yeah, Disney, right?
yeah.
Make it rain.
because even if the story isn't that great, for example, when I first saw Frozen, I didn't like it at all, but the freaking
music
just got stuck in my head. I was always singing, "Do you want to build a snow?"
It stays with you.
Yeah,
God.
And then, like, cut to, I don't know, 7 years later, Frozen 2 comes out, and you're, like, sitting in forced therapy by Disney, and you're crying with every song, and you're just like, and so much of the first melodies came back to the second, and it's just, they have a really amazing way.
They know how
of
to
playing
do it. Really,
with
they
the
know.
Emotions and with music, and it's
they know
just
how to do it. They know how to earn the money.
Yeah.
Stop with the money. They're human as well.
Yes, of course they do amazing work, and they do amazing movies. But like, I mean, as I said, they know
there's
how to make
also,
a movie.
Yeah, there's also the monetary part of
it.
But
they're great at like industry. Just of their own.
Yeah, they know how to work in the industry, that's for certain.
Wish. I honestly wish.
Yeah, for sure.
It's quite amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, I actually have here. I love this quote that the YouTuber I sent you yesterday, where she was at the end talking about the themes of the movie. And
yes. You know, like, Portuguese is gonna come
the
out.
Portuguese is gonna come out.
I love
but,
it.
You know, bear with us, please.
I love the fact that she said about Frollo, the focus on how some men really do loathe the objects of their desire. God damn, this is so true. Even when you think about, because he was feeling that. He was feeling that he was flawed because he loved something, not because he couldn't, because, but because he it was a body instinct, an impulse that he couldn't control for something he was supposed to repel so he could be on top of society. And it's really amazing how, if we put this in perspective of society nowadays, there is a lot of people who might feel very torn about their sexuality, and they don't have not the means, because sometimes families and friends they are surrounded by aren't the best support either, but the whole the whole thing that's in his brain, the way he was educated and all that influences tremendously, and the way he, that person, acknowledges that and learns how to deal with
the
it.
The fact that he feels desire for a gypsy woman is really conflictuous with for him, because not only she's a woman, and so she is less than him for being a woman, she is a gypsy woman, so
she's less than less.
She's less than less.
She should be killed off like the ants that he kills in
the I love like that it's, scene.
It's
brilliant.
It's amazing. It's, like, one by one.
It's a he's a typical oppressor, you know, and it's the fact that he can long for something he hates, I think it's honestly it's one of the best plot points.
Yeah.
Because it develops him so much, you know? It just, I don't know, I love that relationship. And then Esmeralda is like, you know, completely disgusted with him, which is so funny. Like,
I mean, who wouldn't be disgusted by Frollo?
True.
But
she knows
like,
what she is.
Just, we now, like, be talking about all those matters, like, you know, desire and shit and... Just, we don't remember that this is a kid movie.
Yeah, it's
like,
a pretty dark movie for kids, like,
it
tell
is.
You, right?
I mean, like, all that lust and things like that, and even, like, I mean, I didn't get Frollo being, like, attracted to Esmeralda before I was probably 14 or 15.
I never understood the real meaning of the lyrics. There was a time in my life where I rewatched the whole Disney movies at that exact same age, 14, 15, and I started to realize the story of it and what it really meant, the themes, and with Frollo, I was listening to the lyrics and I was like, oh my god, this is disgusting.
Yeah. What a disgusting man.
He's saying these things like... In the Portuguese translation is actually terrible. I don't remember what
I never saw the movie in Portuguese.
Let me just search it up.
I know what you're referring to, because we talked about it in English. It's this burning desire makes me want to sin. It's something like that. And it's like you know, like, dude, just keep it in your pants.
This is the Portuguese version.
The Portuguese version is wait, oh my god.
The Portuguese version is something like
you.
When your body when she's dancing,
sinto
I'm
meu corpo a pecar.
I feel my body
seeming.
So basically, he gets an erection when he watches Esmeralda, and we're like,
this is actually kind of disgusting, but okay.
It's like, I do, just keep it in your pants.
The person that translated that song in Portuguese, did she know that it was a kids movie?
I don't know, because, no, but it's so well made. Kids don't understand that,
it's terrible to say that.
I know, but it's the English
version. I mean, probably
kid
wouldn't understand that it's lust that, I mean, it's talking about lust and not another sin, but, I mean, it's still terrible.
Yeah, it's,
it's awesome, actually. I think it's really funny because the Portuguese language is so not self-explanatory, but it's so descriptive. I don't know how do you say that correctly, but in English things sometimes seem so much more poetic and
it's more figurative. It's
and in Portuguese it's like pretty like down to business. It's like
you get what you get.
Like, yeah, it's I mean, I can respect that, but like it can be a bit concerning when we're talking about kids movies. That's all we're saying, right?
Yeah, but I just think it's quite a...
It's yeah.
And the funniest part, I always laugh when he says it. He has this whole scene of him singing with the fireplace and
the scarf.
Yeah. And then the day after, he goes to burn the whole Paris. And then they ask him like, "Oh, are you okay? I had a problem with the fireplace."
Like, dude, just tell everyone you're having an existential crisis. We've all been there. Like,
oh,
like, own it.
I thought of a terrible thing to say about it. Like,
say it.
He had a boner he couldn't believe.
Yes,
it's been the whole night. Like, so I cannot.
The whole of Paris burns because a dude just couldn't wait one hour. That's
oh my god, that's the best.
That
plot
is
for
terrible.
I mean,
Paris is burning.
It's literally burning. Oh, and the lava falling out from, I don't know, them throwing the lava.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Yeah,
I mean, this scene is pretty just cinematic and just like, wow, nice. But yeah, clearly.
You know what's really cool?
Kinda.
With the lava. The lava's coming out of these, like, gargoyles.
Yeah.
And once Frollo falls with the gargoyle becomes a demon.
Yeah.
And so it's like... the metaphorical, it's pretty explicit actually, way to show that, like, honey, heaven isn't letting you in, you're going to hell.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
God did not have mercy on you, okay?
Like, I'm sorry, but it is your fault.
Yeah, it's like, stop holding on to church. Church doesn't stand for sinners like you.
Yeah.
And it's
like,
not even
be
sinners.
Tough.
It's actually that, it's not even sinners, but he killed lives.
Yeah, I actually kind of like the fact that, I mean, of course, like, Disney wouldn't put Quasimodo or Esmeralda killing a dude because they are a hero, but I like the fact that it's literally the church that kills him.
Yeah.
That's really, because, like, it's still Notre Dame. It's the underback of Notre Dame. Notre Dame is, like, still centered in this, and that's really nice.
Yeah.
And it can also connect to the fact that his like radical views on sin and on church and on virtue are what kills him too. You know, the church, God, his beliefs, his extreme beliefs are what kills him because they drive him to insanity.
Yeah.
It has so much to read into. It's beautiful.
So much layers.
Yes,
we love layers. You know what? I was just thinking, another thing that I think it has in common with Tangled and Hunchback of Notre Dame, Frollo tries to kill Quasimodo with a dagger. I think it's a bit small.
Yeah.
It's a dagger.
Small. Like, that's what she said.
I'm sorry.
He's going to get demonetized.
It's not monetized to begin with, but okay.
Well,
I can get
true.
What you're saying.
But actually, in Entangled, Mother Gothel appears with a dagger, but she doesn't tries to kill Rapunzel. It's
because she doesn't want to kill him.
Yeah, because
she wants
to
kill
steal
him.
Yeah. Otherwise, she wouldn't have.
She would lost basically everything.
The hair would be gone.
Of
all his magic.
And she would die.
Yeah, so
and she did.
The dagger actually
appears. Spoiler alert. We are just spoiling movies.
We don't really know if she died, you know, because she disappeared in the window and we don't see her falling, just the whole flowy movement of the
what's implied there is that she was so old.
She was not a person anymore. She was just like,
I never thought that. I thought that she was just magic and poofed out of the air.
I mean, just think because she's centuries old,
after death, you know, after a few years, bones, like,
more than a few years actually.
Yeah, bones after start to become dust. And I think that's kind of the logic behind that. She's so old that she, like,
she's
she
dust.
Doesn't even have a dead body. She's just dust. She just you know?
Yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense. I never thought that way. Yeah, really? Okay, I live here more knowledgeable. I have no idea how to say that, but yeah, I understand a movie in a different way now.
Yeah,
that's a great thing, actually.
I'm more relieved that she's actually dead. But I'm not sure, although, because there's a TV series from Tangled.
And she is in it.
I don't think so, but
no,
she has... No, because I'm already on season 2, and
she's not in it.
She doesn't appear in it.
She definitely died. I hope so.
But there are some weird things happening that
really?
Kind of relate to her evilness, and yeah, that series is really good. You have to watch it.
Okay,
I will get it on my list and watch it in 10 years probably.
Going back to our
to the outside,
yeah, like such a tangent.
Sorry,
you know,
is
what,
just
one
great.
Thing that, you know, this was criticized by a lot of people is that even though there's this theme of oppression and minorities and justice for the oppressed and you know, becoming who you are and all that stuff, you know, getting past behind the abuse. There's also in the movie the gypsy community is also very demonized. You know, in that song when Quasimodo and Phoebus go to save Esmeralda,
in the court of the
other gypsies are very. Are characterized in a way that's very evil and very...
I don't think it's... I mean, I didn't see it that way. I saw it more of a people that were oppressed and so defensive. And
yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
They
I
saw,
mean,
like, strangers coming into their...
Hiding place. Yeah.
So they're...
I mean, of course they're
defensive, I guess.
I didn't see it as them being evil, but I saw a lot of the kind of opinions online, and I was like, well, I didn't... I was like, should I see it that way, you know? Because it is also an interesting thought that, you know, like, the whole thing, especially with the whole speech that Esmeralda gives about, you know, I'm also a gypsy... But you say I'm kind and I'm not evil and I don't do bad. You know, that thing about community, but also about individuality.
But
yeah, I also think that, you know, it wouldn't be like if strangers, you're being oppressed, you're being followed, and the captain of the guard and the son of the minister of justice waltz into your place. You're not gonna love it, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, that's the thing that had me questioned the most when I saw it. I remember seeing the movie and that part coming out, and I really sympathized with the... I don't know what's his name.
It's
the narrator, actually.
Yeah. He is. I mean, he started off this just like an Aladdin, just like the guy in the street singing about everything.
It's amazing.
That's another Wednesday in the Block, guys.
But I always saw him as a very sympathetic guy because he's putting himself out. He also saw what Quasimodo had been through at the whole festival. And Esmeralda being a part of the community of the gypsies, I thought they had talked to each other like, oh, this person is good. Please don't hurt him. Like, at least Quasimodo, because Phoebus, they have, like, an excuse for being
suspicious
about.
Yeah, he was a guard, so, yeah.
But him coming into the Court of Miracles and then treating him bad, I was like, my God, he's already deformed, and he has been mistreated his whole life. And you have seen him, what the whole society has done to him, throwing him things at the festival. And now you are trying to kill him because he went to the Court Miracles? I thought we were friends.
But it's a thing that he never show empathy, actually, towards Quasimodo or anybody.
Because
the fact that when you are oppressed or your community is oppressed, I mean, you just close. Close yourself to the others, and so of course you won't accept anybody else. So in a way, like, the oppressed kind of oppressed others too.
Yeah.
And that's a never-ending circle. It's just like we just keep on like rejecting people because they're different. And Quasimodo is not part of a community. He's alone. He's different, but alone.
Yeah.
Because gypsies are different, but they are
a community.
Yeah, yeah.
And the well, the I don't know.
The Hunchback community isn't
there is no community. It's just like a guy.
Yeah, because especially in that, as we see in the beginning of the movie, it wasn't, that time wasn't a time that was really safe for people who had
like that,
know,
yeah, and
problems like that.
And so we don't even know.
He called him a demon when he first saw the baby. So
it's just like a thing. And Quasimodo is actually a gypsy. His mother was a gypsy.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not sure it's really his mother, but I guess it is because
she was.
It's a baby. I mean, she wouldn't have stolen a baby, right? So. I mean, it's his mother is a gypsy, but he's not even like accepted by his
community,
because he is different. Because it's funny to laugh about the difference.
And you know the whole thing about the guy that sings all the time.
That dude,
he's amazing.
If you look closely at the scene of the festival, while Esmeralda, once she figures out that it's not a mask, that he's actually, she gets shocked and she tries to push him away. And the other guy pushes him back on stage
because
and is like,
you
know, you wanted the ugliest face in Paris.
There
here
you
it
have.
Is.
Yeah.
And that's what he does. So, you know, he didn't have empathy to begin with while Esmeralda showed it.
Yeah,
you know?
He just wanted to.
He just wanted to
entertain.
Laugh.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's an entertainer.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's
I don't think
it.
He really cares, to be honest. So.
I'm sad. I always liked him, and now I feel like.
And you can still like him.
Yeah, but no, because he's not really nice. Like,
I mean,
he's just trying to entertain people. I know that.
That's nice.
You know, that's the good thing about this movie is that even in the songs, it starts from start to finish. The biggest question is who is the monster and who is the man, and that applies to every single character. It applies to the Frollo, it applies to obviously Quasimodo and their parallelism, you know, between the two, because Quasimodo is called a monster because of his appearance, but he has, you know, a heart of gold. He's such a cute little cinnamon roll. He's the bestest. And Frollo, that's, you know, such an important figure and. Well, most people don't like him, but, you know, they respect him because he's, you know...
He
could kill him,
he has power.
It's not respect,
he's
fear.
He's the, it's fear.
Exactly.
He is the actual monster because he just acts like on it and on his biggest flaws. He acts on his biggest flaws. And then it's a bit like that. And then Phoebus, you know... You have the thing of like, are you gonna be a man or are you gonna be a monster? You're a captain of the guard, and you are trained to. Are you gonna follow orders or are you gonna follow what's right?
And he did follow it for a long time in the movie.
Only once
the rules.
Phoebus actually like.
He tried to swim around them, but
he never tried to like kill Esmeralda or imprison her because he liked her, but he did everything else Frollo asked him to do. And
he
never
chased her
and the only way he finds to save Esmeralda was to
trap her in the
church. So protect her underneath like God's protection, right? So and is he like
That's actually quite a nice perspective.
And Esmeralda is what is a big point of where this this idea, you know, also is seen, you know, the relationship with Esmeralda. While Frollo is obviously a monster relating to her, he either wants to possess her or kill her.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, she shows an ankle, she's, you know, a slut and so she must die. and then Quasimodo puts her on a pedestal like she's
perfection,
and I think that's also why it makes sense that Esmeralda doesn't end up with him, because, you know,
I mean, I don't know, because Phoebus doesn't treat her like equal either.
She's
just like, oh, she's sexy, right?
But,
so I'm gonna hit on her.
But he doesn't. I feel like Phoebus, in his relationship with her, is not as extremist as the other two.
Maybe.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of Phoebus' character that could use a bit revamping, of course. You know, morally wise, he's like, he also obviously objectifies her as the other to do.
But
you know, it's you know, you see when the movie was made, you know, like
that. I mean, it was not that long ago, but,
yeah, but
I guess today
we have that problem. So.
I think is like they didn't have time to develop the romance between like Phoebus and Esmeralda, and
it's
so they just
forced.
Like rush it a little bit. But yeah, I don't think Phoebus is a bad guy, and he saves her, and he's a hero or whatever.
He
likes her. It's not just like, oh, she's nice, I'm gonna hit on her. Like it's more than that. But yeah, it didn't add that time where they fall in love. It just like felt like, oh damn, they're kissing. What?
Exactly.
Like, right.
But all the Quasimodo, like, ew, is that allowed? Is that allowed?
Quasimodo was just like,
scene is terrible. He's
and
dying.
Then, and then they're kissing like for an extreme long
but
time,
yeah, like
you've been just
slowly making out in front of Quasimodo.
And he's like, he's heartbreaking, and the song from behind playing Heaven's Light, and he sang at the beginning of the movie about his love for Esmeralda. And
but you know what? I think it was important that to happen, because it could have just like.
She was the one who kissed him.
Quasimodo could just like have been like super hurt and just like never gave anything else to them and just like don't try anything and don't be their friends and whatever.
Yeah.
But he doesn't, and so that shows really how of a good person he is.
Yeah.
And without that, we will still have a doubt that, okay, but he likes her. So, you know?
I think Phoebus is really good.
Phoebus is important.
To show the other characters as well. Phoebus and Esmeralda really bring out that old thing of, are you good or are you
bad?
You know, because Frollo hates them and wants them both dead. And they didn't do anything to him. And then Quasimodo that, you know, we can say kind of suffers because of them.
And
of course, it's not their fault that Quasimodo feels attracted to Esmeralda, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But he still chooses to do good. He chooses to be their friend and to help them. And I think they're really important characters also in that way, because they, you know, they help develop.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think that Phoebus was a little bit underworked compared to the other characters.
Yeah,
Esmeralda has a lot of depth to her.
Yeah.
And Quasimodo and Frollo, but Phoebus felt just a little bit plain and a bit meh.
Yeah, but I mean, but the thing I was saying with Phoebus being the middleman here, and and that's kind of why it makes sense that he ends up with Esmeralda, is... It's a bit like that. It's like, you know, there's not that much to say about their relationship, but what you can see is that he doesn't like make her a demon and he doesn't make her an angel. He sees her as she is, as a woman, you know?
Yeah.
He doesn't have a radical view on her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's mainly why that relationship works. It's because it's normal, you know? Like, It's underbuilt.
It's a guy eating on a dude, and well,
that's not this film.
Well, Esmeralda's not a dude, I think, but it's just a guy eating on a girl.
Yeah,
and yeah, basically, damn.
That could have taken a turn.
That would have been a great story, though.
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
Call me
write a
name.
Sequel.
Oink.
We don't talk about the
sequel. We don't talk about the sequel.
We don't talk about the sequel.
That's not a movie. I don't consider that a piece of work, even. That's just shame. But actually, another thing about the relationship, I think we can see... Esmeralda kind of cuts the crap out of him.
Yeah.
She threw her away, like she did with Quasimodo. She kind of shows Phoebus how good it is to be humble and how you could... Really, and I'm going to make another connection to Tangle, but I don't want to go there again. But you can really see a kind of, if you compare the two relationships with both characters, Rapunzel and Eugene, and
Flynn Rider,
and Esmeralda and Phoebus, they are the female characters are just. Embedded in good, and they are super humble characters.
Yeah,
who...
I get that
yeah, they have a similar dynamics.
Yeah, because the guys are the same. They are like super
cocky dudes.
Yeah,
cocky dudes, super overconfident.
Yeah,
overconfident.
And that the girls cut that a bit.
Cut that, yeah.
They're like, all right,
calm down,
sit
dude.
Sit down.
Yeah, and it's not.
You're not fighting a dude that's twice your size. Shut up.
Exactly. And it's not like that thing that everybody... When people see these movies where these kind of relationships create, they think like, this means I can change a man, I can change a guy if I don't like some things about him. It's not that. It's just trying to appeal to that part of him that we know that exists.
Yeah, I think like talking about Rapunzel now, sorry, because Flynn is... has a lot more layers to him than Phoebus, but like Flynn in the beginning is like super cocky, overconfident, but is like you get to know his more sensitive part, and so it is in there, and we all know that is in there, and so Rapunzel, yeah, she saw it before like us, I guess, and she just like.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it.
She brings it out.
She brings out the good in him.
And his innocence as well. Since she's so innocent, I think it rubs off on him too.
And that is where the Hunchback of Notre Dame is really different, because Esmeralda is everything but
innocent. She's not.
Yeah, she's a self-made woman.
Yeah,
exactly.
Strong, don't need nobody. And you know, and here you see how selfless she is. It's in her song. You know, while everyone is asking, I want wealth, I want fame, I want this. She says, I want nothing, I can get by. What I want is for God to help the people that can't help themselves.
Yeah.
You know, like, she doesn't ask for herself. She asks for the people she loves and for the people that can't... They can't even enter a church and ask God themselves, you know. And it's really beautiful. That song, you know, it always makes me cry.
Yes. Give me the chill in that scene. That cinematography.
Yeah, the cinematography of the movie is brilliant.
Yeah,
brilliant.
The CGI is just wow.
Yeah, and the light, that scene from the light of the sun coming through the.
It's really the thing that, like, because it's in a church, like, the church for itself is just like this mystical vibe to it, because it's so, like, imponent and powerful and beautiful, and the light and everything, like, all church has that to them, and so her singing in the church feels just like, oh damn, wow, that's wow, powerful.
Yeah, it just have, it's another scene that has a lot of layers, and it's just the, when you start to put together characters with with architectural things that almost not appear but behave as characters as well, as we were talking about earlier, it's just like a huge explosion of meaning. And it actually, I remember seeing the movie as a kid, and the scene where the priest asks her to get out of the church, the cathedral, I remember looking, I was like, really? She was singing, everybody was happy with her in there, and from the moment someone came in and made a fuss because she was there, they all started to argue, because in a way society and the people of Paris in this movie specifically act in a way that it's more convenient for them, right?
Yeah,
they don't want to be the ones
we all
human
we
beings
all
do that, man.
We all do that. We always like act because of our own interest before thinking about the interests of others, and that's why like racism, sexism are so deeply in, like, how, I don't know, I don't miss the word, but they are so deeply in ourselves and our society and how we work, and it's kind of bad, but it's realistic at least.
Yeah, exactly, and that I think what makes us what makes it change that way that we all have, because it's like that thing of Freud where like we all have these impulses and these ways of living, we all have like the basic needs, we all have hunger, we all get tired, need to sleep, But the thing that makes us different from each other and what makes us human and people, decent people, is putting our needs not before other people, but after other people, after other right? People.
Yeah, caring for others, because before caring for us. I mean, not always, but in a lot of situations, it's important to know that some people need help and need things before we need them. I mean, I can perfectly go fine without having this right now and helping this person getting the thing she needs right now, you know? Yeah. And usually we don't act like that, or most people don't act like that always.
Yeah.
They'd be like, yeah, I could help that person, but I really want that thing, so fuck it, you know?
Yeah, it's, and you can see that that attitude in that, and also in the way we treat each other, are talking to each other and treat each other emotionally and but in the way we treat each other as people, not in like helping, just people talking to people, like when you evidence bullying, that's an example of someone who's not paying attention or putting themselves in other people's shoes. And I think that that really starts there, because if you don't have that kind of attention and, I don't know, that capacity to put yourself in other people's place, then how can you really ask for compassion yourself or empathy?
Yeah, it's complicated. Yeah. But I mean, nobody's nobody. Usually people are not willing to do, to be the first to like back it down and show like, you know, this part of themselves. Usually they're like, oh, but that person doesn't do that to me, so I won't do that to others.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's complicated, but yeah, you need some people to do that, and Quasimodo is one of them.
Yeah, and you know, the thing I feel like is this thing with helping others versus helping yourself. It's like, most people are very radical about it.
Yeah.
Or like, either they like always put themselves first, or they always put others first, and it can be like that, you know. You gotta have, like everything in life, you gotta have balance, you know. Of course you have to take care of others, and you have to, you know, not you have, you should help others and try your best for your community, for your cities, for your world, basically. We're all living in this crappy place anyway.
We're all in this together.
Yeah, we're all in this together. But, you know, you shouldn't let, you know, the world step on you, you know? Like, you shouldn't...
Yeah, you can't always put others first.
Yeah, yes. You gotta help yourself as well. You gotta, you know... It's really hard to find that balance, you know? There's always gonna be times in your life when you're going to be more selfish, and times in your life when you're going to be more selfless. But I think it's that fluctuation between the two makes it healthy.
Yeah.
And you know, it's very much about finding balance within yourself. And yeah, and I think in the movie, Esmeralda really shows that.
Mm-hmm.
Because of course she's fighting for her community, and she's fighting for Quasimodo, and she's fighting for everyone that needs help.
But she needs
and
her
in that music,
freedom.
But she also needs her freedom to do that. So she can't just forget that she's being persecuted to help others. You know, she gotta balance the two, and it's very much like that. You,
Yeah, and the ending scene of the kid touching his Quasimodo's face and caressing him and hugging him, I think that's also a way of the kid showing, like, not only look what he did to Paris, like, he saved us, kind of, but also this kid shows and is a representation of the ingenuity. And the... kind of, yeah, that ingenuity that most of people kind of lose. And it kind of represents, it's kind of a it's like they send the child, like, see if he's safe. And then when she hugs him, it's just like, it's okay. And they're like, yay, we love you, Quasimodo, you're not bad.
I think that, and I think this kid at the end of the movie shows that we are not born like oppressors, and we are not born like with hatred. And so, of course, the kids are not afraid of them because he's just another human being. Different, but another human being. And this kid shows it to us, audience, but to the people of Paris. And so they get it. They get that. I mean, if this kid, this like naive thing, like little being can do it, why can't we?
Yeah, it's... You know, it's what you said. We aren't born hateful. We aren't born oppressors. We aren't born bad. We learn it. And if we can learn it, we can unlearn it. And that applies to everything, you know? Hate speech, you know, like hurtful opinion. You can even call it opinions. Hurtful thoughts you have about other people and, you know, being biased and everything. Those are the kind of stuff that are embedded into you through your culture and through your environment and education. And if people can put that in you, you can take it out. Of course it's gonna, like, be hard.
It's kind of more complicated to take out, like, years and years of
eating that.
Of beliefs and of...
Yeah.
Like, it's really complicated to...
I mean, if you're allergic to your whole life saying, I don't know, that you were allergic to bananas, you're not just going to start eating like a banana every day. Once you find out that maybe you aren't, you're not going to take that risk. It's a slow process of finding out that, you know, maybe it isn't like...
maybe you are wrong.
Maybe I wasn't allergic to bananas after all.
Yeah. Maybe I just don't like the taste.
Maybe I just don't like bananas.
But I mean, I gotta respect bananas. I'm not gonna like throw every banana I see in the trash. You know, they deserve to be where they are.
Oh,
yeah. And bananas this was such a stupid analogy.
I mean, it's a great analogy.
Great one.
Respect bananas, people.
Respect the bananas. We should do t-shirts.
Yes.
The bananas.
First episode and I'm already thinking about merchandise. Oh my god.
Respect the banana. And you're a local, not artist, but you're a local farmers, like, because of the bananas.
Because
of
the bananas are not very locals, but...
Yeah,
bananas are not really local.
But I mean...
But it's Portuguese, so bananas, but then it's... Ooh, we gotta stand.
I mean,
we always stand.
We can stand. We will
from
stand.
Every single part
support,
of the world.
Support worldwide, okay?
Yeah,
not only
course.
Local. Everybody deserves to be supported.
Everybody deserves
And
it.
If you think nobody supports you, you got us.
Yeah.
You put a little, like, sound effect.
We need to do a jingle for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the Doofenshmirtz song?
Yes!
But,
oh my god, if you don't have nobody... What was that? I don't remember.
Which song?
You know...
Doofenshmirtz,
oh, yeah.
That would be great.
It's kind of a little...
Yeah.
We need to do that. Yeah, we definitely need to do that.
I still gotta do our logo.
We don't talk about that.
We don't talk about that. But yeah, you know, I think this concludes our thoughts on
The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah. You know, we went on a lot of tangents.
Rapunzel was very present in this.
A little frozen in there, you know, for a little
course.
Spice. And a lot of social comments. That you may or may not agree with. Respect the bananas.
And that's the topic of this whole thing.
Yeah,
right?
So...
Yeah, but I think that's a great part of this. This kind of things, content, exists because of that. No. I don't always agree with the film analysis people put on YouTube about certain films. But I don't go there writing negative comments like, you suck, your opinion sucks.
I mean, it's
not right, it's his opinion.
It's our opinion, and that's great hearing others' opinions.
Yeah.
Your own opinion.
It's right there.
I mean, we'll probably, somewhere along the line,
I don't know when, have somewhere where you can discuss your opinions with us, hopefully. And we would very much like to know
what you think.
Yeah, if you agree, if you don't agree, what your thoughts are, if you've seen the movies, if you haven't.
Yeah.
And if you've been spoiled, basically.
Yeah,
sorry.
You know, and, you know, it's being the first episode, it's really special because, you know, it's something we've been talking about for a long time. And so we're very happy to finally be recording this and putting it out there. And, you know, as three very, like, existential cinema students in their last years of, in their last year of, you know, our first, our degree, we really needed this extra something in our life. And I feel like this thing with sharing and that's very possible now, I feel like, it's really special.
Yeah,
it is.
It's a really raw experience, but a great one, actually. And don't forget, we are kind of beginners in this. So if there's something we didn't say or some little flaws in our language.
Or a lot of flaws.
Yeah, a lot of flaws. Like, don't forget the nervous system kind of gets in the way of that. So please be patient.
Yeah. And
we will get used to this, I guess.
Yeah.
Someday.
And, we hope you like it.
Yeah, we hope you like it. We hope you love hearing us talking about everything and nothing at the same time.
Yeah, and you hope you like our tangents and our ramblings as well. And yeah, I think that's it for today. Yeah,
stay tuned.
Let's call it a wrap.
Yeah, let's call it a wrap.
Let's call it a wrap.